Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined today for a special draft edition of The Headquarters by, first up, it's Raptors HQ's Harsh Dave. How you doing, man?
What's up, buddy? It's been a while. How's it going?
Yeah, it's been a while. Not bad. Glad to have you back. And joining us also from the hated rival, Raptors Republic, fresh off his 1-3 performance at the Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament. It's Blake Murphy. How you doing, man?
First of all, it wasn't 1-3. There was some crap around the tie-breaking procedures, and you know that still hangs on Raptors Republic though, because it was Zerara that messed that up. So that's right. Still on us as a team. How did you guys do, by the way?
Oh, we valiantly went 0-4. Right.
Oof.
Bowed out. We ended up, our first game was against the eventual champions. We got pretty demolished in that one. The second game we played, it was a closer game, still lost. Third game we played, it was against the Trap Since 95 guys, mm-hmm. Who are excellent guys. Give them a follow on Twitter. And that game was super close. It was like 10-10. They scored a bucket with like 30 seconds left on the clock. And then local celebrity Dwayne Watson, he probably got fouled on the final play, but there was no call. We ended up losing the game by one. And then we got ship-pumped by some team of Giants in the round of 16 or whatever it was. So yeah,
I feel like I need to explain so that it's not just sounding like an excuse. Basically what happened is I made the schedule. So I organize this tournament every year. I didn't play last year because there was too much to do organizing. I wanted to play this year. So I laid out the schedule. We kind of rolled over the rules from the year before, and Zerar and Sam ran things so I could play. But they changed the tiebreaker rule. I had built enough time into the schedule to play sudden death, but instead we played where a tie resulted in a coin flip, and the team that won the coin flip shot for the victory. I don't know if you know this, but generally pickup basketball players aren't 50% three-point shooters, so it was winning the coin flip was actually to our detriment. And that's,
well, couldn't
that's
you defer?
Yeah, but you can't defer.
Well, if you're smart, you would. That's a Belichickian move to do that.
If you're smart, yeah. If there were, like, cash on the line or something, I definitely would have deferred. But, like, in a 3-on-3 tournament, you can't win the right to shoot and be like, nah, you guys shoot. I'd rather shoot and miss than pass it up and have them make it, for sure. So
you got to have integrity, man.
I'm scared. I so would have deferred. Harsh, why weren't you there?
Because I live in Waterloo. Is that a good reason?
No, my team was a 5-1-9 team.
Oh, jeez. Well, I have no good excuse then.
I blame Dan Reynolds for
excuses. I'm not that good at basketball. That's the truth.
Nope, that excuse doesn't hold either because I have that match also.
You should have seen Team TSN 1050. It was Dwayne was pretty good, but the rest of us were just some schlubby white dudes who just chucked it too much. But I blame Dan Reynolds for you not coming, Harsh. It's like he didn't even try to put together a Raptors HQ team. Like, he was just like, you know, I'm going with my pickup buddies, and all his pickup buddies deserted him. He ended up only having three guys on his team, and they went 1-3 too. So I felt like vindicated with that.
Yeah, he deserved it.
Yeah. So today's episode, we're mostly just going to talk draft. The Raptors have the 9th and 27th picks in the first round this year. It's a nice change from, you know, usually for the last couple of years picking 20th, and making the conference finals and having a lottery pick is uncharted waters, obviously, for the Raptors. So that's pretty cool. We're going to talk about that, sort of the philosophy of what you want the Raptors to do with the 9th pick, some of the guys who might be available there. We'll also talk sort of about the draft as a whole and the strength of it. Just sort of get into some philosophy stuff and trade talk and all that, you know, hypothetical, you know, daydreaming that we love to do ahead of the draft. We also have a ton of listener questions today, so stay tuned for that. We'll get to all those. There might be some overlap in terms of what we talked about in the first segment and the listener questions, but we'll get to that. And then in the episode sponsor segment, I'm not sure who we're going to do yet. We'll figure it out, but we'll get to that. Last time Blake was on, I believe it was Will Solomon we did, so maybe we can get in the nice deep cut from Blake as our episode sponsor this week. So we'll be back in just a second here to cover all your draft needs here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Harsh Dave and Blake Murphy. Let's dive into the draft, boys. there's a lot of different ways we can start, I guess. Obviously, as I mentioned off the top, the Raptors have the 9th and 27th picks. I believe they are shut out of the second round. Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Barring a trade.
Yeah, of course. So no Norman Powell this year. I mean, maybe they could pick up a second round pick for a shitty point guard, but we'll see. They don't really have any of those on the roster anymore. We're going to, I guess, there's so many ways you can start, I guess. Let's just start with just like the general philosophy of what you want the Raptors to do with the 9th pick. Harsh, we'll start with you. I mean, there's different ways they can go. They can, you know, look to trade the pick, which I think is kind of the way I'd like to see them go, although I'm not sure the pick is super valuable given this is kind of a bad draft. You know, you could see them go for a guy who's more ready to contribute next year, given next year is sort of a win now season for the Raptors, given where, you know, Kyle Lowry's at in his contract and his age. And then you could also go for a sort of potential guy down the road, sort of planning for after Lowry, and to hopefully have sort of a succession plan when he's gone. But what, Harsh, do you want to see the Raptors do out of those three options, or is there a fourth door that I didn't open?
I don't know. Like, with trades, I feel like you always – I feel like people tend to talk themselves into the idea of trading up or trading down or trading for a better asset. But trading is more fun to do, like, just in, like, a fantasy perspective, like, just to have fun with it than actually – a strategic thing that teams actually partake in from year to year. Like, I don't think it, like, the way that people talk about trading up and trading down in drafts, like, you'd think it happens every year, but it really doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, this isn't the NFL. Right?
Yeah, like, exactly. It's not, yeah. Like, I've heard of people talking about, oh, why don't NBA teams just do what Bill Belichick does? Well, you know, it doesn't work like that. You can't just keep trading down, like, your roster is too small. Like, you only have 15 roster spots. Like, you have to start using some of your picks. In general, like, that's why I try not to entertain the trade option, just because, like, it convolutes matters a lot. In terms of what I want them to do with this pick, I don't know. I think most people are starting to feel this way now, that you just draft who you think will end up being the best player available. Like, don't try to pigeonhole. Like, don't try to reach for a guy based on need. Just as long as you believe that the guy that you're getting will end up being the best basketball player of the people you have available, that's the dude that you pick. Unless, of course, there's like a really tiny difference between him and the next guy up, but then the next guy fits better. Like, obviously, you have to consider those trade-offs, but in general, just pick the best player available. I think that's the general philosophy that I would take. In the draft.
Yeah, when it comes to trading, like, I probably am guilty of this too, but it feels like a lot of the trade talk is just sort of, you know, a want to trade the pick just for the sake of trading it, without really any... it's so tough to gauge what value you're going to get back for whatever you try to package together as a deal. With the Raptors in particular, maybe their most tradable guys, they make it even more complicated given... Like, Terrence Ross, for example, his contract doesn't kick in until July 1st, so it makes it that much more complicated. Blake, what about you? Are you kind of with Harsh there in the best player available thing, or is that something the Raptors should be going for this year?
Definitely the best player available. I want to double back to that in a sec, but from a trade perspective, normally I'd agree that I think it's convoluted and the discussion is, you know, it's people filling time, basically, while they wait for the draft. I do think this year there's some merit, because the impression that I get is that the Raptors would prefer to use that number 9 pick as a trade chip as opposed to using it on a draft pick. There's a bit of a drop-off after the number 8 pick. There's a sense that next year's draft class is so strong, and with limited spots to be committed to development projects at a single time, maybe they'll look to add a rookie or two next year. And then they also have some targets they really like with that number 27 pick if they end up keeping that and using it on a domestic player. So I think all of this conspires to... you know, I think people are right to look at potential trades, but if it's trading up and trading down, you know, I don't think the number 27 pick is enough sweetener to get into, say, the top 5 with the number 9 pick. This draft just isn't that good. The type of asset you're going to get at 27 is the same type of asset you might be able to get at, you know, 35, 40 in this draft. So it's not a big enough sweetener. I do think they would prefer to trade it, but I think what you'll see happen is, similar to when the Cleveland Cavaliers selected Andrew Wiggins number 1, you could see the Raptors use the pick on a player only to turn around and trade him later. It might be a case where, you know, Woj or Stein or Chad Ford breaks the trade ahead of time. But you mentioned Terrence Ross's contract. If you were to trade Ross and the number 9 pick, everyone's favorite trade scenario right now, because of Ross's poison pill provision and because the pick doesn't count for anything against the cap, you'd only be able to bring back in like $3.5 million roughly. And even that would require a team acquiring Ross to acquire him into cap space. Whereas if you sign the pick, wait 30 days, and pair it with Ross, you could bring back $17.7 million in salary. We're talking Jimmy Butler money. Jimmy Butler's obviously that's obviously not the right package for Jimmy Butler. But you can bring back, you know, if the Raptors are patient and they can put some feelers out at least on who the most valuable trade chip is, you could see a Wiggins scenario. Unfortunately, the way the NBA works, you know, we're going to have to do, even if they trade the pick, we'll have to do the song and dance of pretending that they still use the pick like they did with Roy Hibbert in the Jermaine O'Neal trade a couple years ago. So, you know, whether or not a trade is agreed to, I think a trade will still be on the table into the offseason, which goes further to Harsh's point about taking the best player available. You know, you want that to be an asset. The draft isn't just about who can plug in and be the best fit immediately. Even though the Raptors were a conference finals team, the reality is that most people tend to overrate the impact that a rookie is going to have in his first year. You look at who's going to be available at number 9 based on most mocks, and there are some power forwards there, even some guys you could describe as stretch fours, but not a single one of these guys is going to be better than Patrick Patterson in 2016-17. With a rookie coming in and playing in this high level of a situation, you know, you're hoping for a guy that can give you some spot minutes in his first season. And for that reason, you know, not only would I say you take the best player available and figure out fit later, you guys know well I don't care much for traditional positions, so, you know, get me talent and we'll figure the rest out after the fact. But I'd also, in the Raptors situation, I think I run counter to the grain here, where everyone seems to be looking at guys that can help now because this team needs to take the jump and they're in a position to compete right now. I look at it and I see, particularly if the Raptors re-sign DeRozan to a substantial contract, there's not a ton of flexibility here in terms of roster, in terms of cap space over the next little while. And because no one you're going to get at number 9 is going to come in and make a big impact right away in the most likely scenario, not only am I taking best player available, I'd further qualify that by saying that I'm swinging for upside with that pick. And I'm not saying you really reach on a guy who's all upside, but, you know, before his draft stock rose so much, I was really in on Marquise Chris for exactly that reason. He's not a guy that's going to come in and give you much in 2016-17, most likely, but he's a high upside guy. So that's kind of what I'd be looking at number 9, no matter who slides it and who's available there, is best player available, like Harsh laid out, but with a strong preference for ultimate upside versus best player right now, this minute.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point with the overvaluing of what rookies do. I think this year's draft class is probably going to, or sorry, the 2015 draft class is going to kind of skew people's expectations of what the 9th pick is going to be, because, you know, last year it was such a, I mean, the 9th pick was Frank Kaminsky, and he was maybe one of the least impactful guys in the lottery.
Mr. Steal Your Girl.
But, like, he was, there were a lot of guys who came in and were, like, you know, surprisingly good contributors right away. I don't think you're going to see that, especially with this draft, which, you know, was widely regarded as being a hell of a lot weaker than last year's. And just to double back to the trade thing first before we move on, just to sort of the guys that are, you know, sort of in the Raptors, you know, area in the draft. You mentioned the whole Ross plus 9 thing. The only thing with that is, like, it's, you mentioned Jimmy Butler, that's obviously not going to happen. Blake, I know you've put up with me being my, like, first, like, sounding board for bad trade ideas, and I appreciate that. I just, like, what can you even realistically expect to get back for Ross and whoever they end up drafting at 9 if they decide to do the Wiggins thing and wait 30 days after he's signed?
Jimmy Butler, obviously.
Well, yeah, that's obviously number one.
It's a good question.
If you're giving them Terrence Ross, they probably have to give back Bobby Portis as well in that. So it gets tricky. But,
yeah, Bobby Portis hasn't scored 51 points in a game, you know? it's a good point, though, especially if you're looking to improve at the power forward situation, which, you know, the Raptors have been pretty clear that a starting four, or at least someone that can share the role with Patrick Patterson and a backup three, those are kind of their priorities this offseason, at least as things stand right now. Obviously, things can change in a hurry. Like this time last year, we were talking about potential point guards with the number 20 pick because it looked like the Raptors needed one. Things can change quickly, but yeah, you're right. Ross in the number nine, we don't know. Like right now, it doesn't look like that could get you much at all. But as the offseason plays out, and you know Terrence Ross's $10 million per year starts to look maybe a little better, maybe that opens up some options. Maybe you know maybe some other teams have things break out in free agency where a power forward becomes superfluous or another player does. And again, that goes back to why I'm fully, you know, Masai Ujiri is an asset manager first and foremost, and I'm all for that strategy, which is, again, it goes back to Harsh's point about best player available, because that's going to be the biggest asset if a trade opens up later.
I saw I saw somebody toss out, like, nine in salary cap filler for Taj Gibson, and I was like, you know, that's kind of intriguing because he's at, like, I think he's 2 years, $8 million per year for the next 2 years, I want to say. Again, like I think it's important to remember that it's gonna be hard to find like to package like nine and Terrence Ross or nine alone and get somebody who's like an all-star or an all NBA caliber player. Like with that sort of a package, you're just looking at filling the gaps with somebody who's not Luis Scola, basically.
Yeah.
Luis Scola was very effective in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I want to say, I know this is a draft podcast. If Scola is not back with the team next year, I'm going to miss having that guy around. It's, we all grew a little tired of him as the starting power forward, but from a like locker room perspective and entertainment perspective, it's going to be, you know, I'm kind of crossing my fingers he's back on a veteran minimum to just kind of fill out the roster and be like that mentor assistant coach guy.
His quotes were losing, awesome. Sorry, go ahead.
No, so I'm just going to say losing Scola and Biombo is kind of a hit to the charismatic heights that team can reach, I think. What were you going to say, Harsh?
I was going to say, like, all of his quotes were so amazing, like, during the playoffs when he was, like, when Kyle was struggling and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. It was, like, sobering to read, Luis Scola, say things to put everything in context.
That's okay. If Scola and Biombo are gone, it's, like, Bebe going to take up the mantle. That guy's hilarious to talk to. Damari Carroll has some pretty good quotes, I guess. I feel like they'll be okay. Let's get back
clearly,
to the draft.
Clearly the need here in the draft, then, is just to draft the best quote.
Best. Yeah. Charisma. Charisma's important, man.
Maybe with 27. I mean, let's get into what's there at 9. And just sort of, as you mentioned, Blake, it does feel like there's like 8 guys who are kind of the top tier. Obviously, Simmons and Ingram are the top two, and then you have Dragan Bender, Jaylen Brown, Jamal Murray, Buddy Hield, Chris Dunn, and Marquise Chris sort of in that next sort of, I don't know, in most mock drafts, those seem to be the first 8 guys off the board. I was on Utah radio yesterday doing like the Raptors pick and their media mock draft, and those were the 8 guys off the board. I'll get to how I think the Raptors would take with 9 or who I took with 9 in a little bit, but it doesn't feel like there's anything super sexy at 9. As you mentioned, there's a lot of power forward guys. There's a couple, potential, like pure centers, I guess. There's a wing that I'm particularly interested in. I guess if you're looking at those top 8 guys, though, Blake, this is something you said you wanted to talk about a little bit in this show when we were talking before. Of the 8 guys who could realistically fall to 9, obviously Simmons and Ingram and probably Bender and Murray aren't falling there. But of the other guys, who are you most hoping falls to 9 for the Raptors to snag?
Most hoping, Marquise Chris is kind of my guy, from earlier in the process. Obviously he's kind of stripped the value out and made that not seem like a particularly savvy or, particularly original pick. I think that the most likely to slip, though, and it might be a good thing for the Raptors, is Jaylen Brown. Just because it's tough to, because he's a wing who can't really shoot all that much yet, it's tough to find a place where he's a great fit. And because he's somewhere in the middle of, he's maybe, people seem to think Chris has a much higher upside, whereas Buddy and Jamal Murray are more help now guys. Bender maybe has a little bit more upside long term too. He's not a perfect fit in any of the landing spots, but I think if you put him on the Raptors, even though he doesn't fill a position of need right away, some places list him as a shooting guard, I think you could play him in a lot of those smaller lineups the Raptors got really creative with late in the year, particularly in the playoffs. I think even though he's only 6'7", he's got the body where he might be able to play a small four, either next to DeRozan on the wing or next to Damari Carroll. I think he's interesting if he were to slide for the Raptors, especially since they've shown over the last couple of years that they don't care that much about college track record shooting. That's something they feel that they can help guys improve. And Brown's shot doesn't look that broken. It's just, you know, it hasn't been particularly effective. I think he's going to be a pretty good multi-position defender. He's got nice length. He's got nice size. And that's, you know, he kind of fits the Raptors draft mold as it pertains to later picks the last couple years. So, you know, I'd be interested to see if he slips. And I think of those eight names, he's maybe the most likely to slip. Maybe I'm talking myself into that being hopeful, though.
Harsh, who do you hope slips and who do you think is most likely?
Yeah, like, it's interesting about Jaylen Brown. Like, I think I agree with Blake that he's one of the guys that could slip just based on his college track record, the fact that he can't really – well, he wasn't effective shooting right away. And so there's a possibility that he slips. But all these teams ahead of the Raptors are all freaking lottery – sorry, they're all out of the playoffs. And I'd be – like, well, except for the Celtics. But shouldn't they just be aiming for upside? Like, well, what does a team like, I don't know, New Orleans have to gain by picking – okay, well, maybe New Orleans is a bad example. But what does a team like the Kings have to gain by picking Buddy Hield instead of a guy like Jaylen Brown and swinging for the fences?
Are you suggesting the Kings may not make the best decision?
Exactly. No, but like, so if I'm one of these teams, I'm swinging for the fences and grabbing a guy like Jaylen Brown. Like, if you look at all of these teams that were powerhouses in the playoffs, like, having two-way wings is absolutely essential for when teams go small, and Jaylen Brown could theoretically be that guy in a few years' time, maybe not next year, but so yeah, like, I like Jaylen Brown a lot. I feel like there's some DeMar DeRozan to him. He's probably a little bit more athletic, but in terms of just the makeup, there's a lot of DeMar DeRozan I see there.
He does live at the line.
Yeah, and the guy that I like personally a lot is, and that I hope slips, is Jamal Murray.
Shocking.
Yeah. Kitchener dog, you know how it is.
Yeah, 519.
Yeah. So I like, look, Jamal Murray, there are concerns about whether he can play the point full time, whether he can defend the one or the two. But what I think will translate for him is his shooting. And Dwayne Casey loves having two point guards on the floor, or more specifically two ball handlers on the floor at the same time. He kind of struggled to create lineups where, you know, he didn't have that extra support next to Lowry or next to Joseph. And, you know, Jamal Murray gives you a different look besides Terrence Ross, where he's a guy who can, you know, spot up about as well. He can handle the ball a little bit, and Terrence Ross wasn't terribly good defensively anyway. So, he's a guy that intrigues me a little bit. He can sort of play the Grievous Vasquez role from a couple of years ago. Hopefully there's a little bit more upside, but he's a guy that intrigues me there as well. And, you know, he's so young. He's only, what, 18, 19 years old. So
That's the dream for a lot of Raptors fans, is him slipping a little bit. And we've gotten, I don't know about you guys, but we've gotten a ton of comments and tweets about, like, hey, can we package this to move up and get Murray? So I don't think you're alone in that one at all, Harsh.
Yeah, and like, I'm trying to, like, obviously I have the attachment to him just from, you know, him being Canadian and having, like, watched a lot of Kentucky ball, but he was legitimately lights out shooting from, I think, January onwards. He was, like, a close to 50% from three. He was coming around screens like, you know, like J.J. Redick early in his Duke career. Like, I don't even think that's an exaggeration, the way that he was finding open spots on the floor. He looked like a pro style shooting guard, and I thought that was really impressive to see him play off ball that well. So personally, Jamal Murray of the top eight would be really, really sweet. But I doubt it'll happen.
Right. My hope is, and it's tough because the team picking right ahead of the Raptors is the Kings, and they probably need a point guard. But if you look at the other teams in the top eight, you know, there isn't a whole lot of need for a point guard, especially, you know, Philly and the Clippers, or the Lakers, are sort of already, they're already spoken for really with what they're going to pick. Boston doesn't really need a point guard. I guess maybe they could take Chris Dunn. But, you know, other than Sacramento, does any team really, like, fit the bill as a team that might take Chris Dunn?
New Orleans, I think. Not,
yeah, I mean, I think they'd
prefer a shooter, Yeah. But, like, I think Drew Holiday only has 1 year left on his deal. Right. They don't – I mean, Tyreek Evans is probably better off at the wing than backing up at the point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd
be interested in Dunn if he was to fall to nine. I know the Raptors have Lowry, obviously, and Corey Joseph, but – you know, that's a contingency plan going forward if Lowry ends up, you know, costing too much or walking away after next season when he becomes a free agent and in line for a huge raise. And it's he seems like a guy who's sort of, you know, his timeline matches up nicely a little bit with, like, Valanciunas, for example. I don't know. I don't think it happens just because I think he probably goes to the Kings at the very latest because the Kings are a disaster and Darren Collison's a piece of shit. And,
whoa!
what?
I didn't realize anyone in the world felt that strongly either direction about Darren Collison.
He got in trouble, man. He got arrested for domestic violence.
When?
Like last 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man, I missed that. Yeah, no, so, yeah. Definitely a piece of shit then.
Yeah, so, and Rajon Rondo, who knows if he's back. So Dunn's probably going to the Kings, but if he fell to nine, it'd be pretty ecstatic for the Raptors to take him. As you mentioned, they do a lot of two-point guard lineups. I think that could be pretty interesting.
Well, we talked about, you know, the taking the best player available and just the trade value of the pick, too. Pretty much if any of these guys slides, you know, those are the scenarios I think usually when you see teams move up and down in the draft is when a guy starts the slide and someone who maybe didn't think they had a shot at a guy then gets in the mix. And, you know, if Dunn's there at number nine or any of these names we've talked about really – you know, it's great for the Raptors from a drafting perspective, but also the value of that trade chip just went up too.
Blake, for sure. Blake, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, what's up?
What do you think about Buddy?
I think he's fine. Like, I think he's going to be a solid NBA player. I don't see the star potential that a lot of people seem to see in him. Like, this next Steph Curry stuff got a little out of hand. I like him a lot as a dude. Like, he seems like a great guy that you'd want in the organization, you'd want to have around your team, you'd like to be a part of a young core. But I don't know. I think he's going to be good, not great. So, you know, if he slides, he should still be the pick because you could play DeRozan. You know, you just laid out the case for Murray. Sean laid out the case for Dunn. You could easily plug Buddy in on the wing and just play DeRozan at the three a little bit more. And be fine and get that additional boost of shooting, but I'm not quite to the point of thinking he's going to be, you know, a star, and I know there are some pockets of people who think that.
So guys, let's sort of get into, you know, assuming the top eight goes chalk, and this top eight that we've mentioned that seems like it's probably the first tier of guys, let's just go around the table and go with who you would pick with the ninth pick, assuming those eight guys are off the board. Blake, let's start with you.
Can we just talk about the eight guys who might slip? There's so much this line of like unsexiness that gets
So here's kind of the group of guys that you're picking from. I think it's Deontay Davis from Michigan State, Skyle Ebisier from Kentucky, Henry Ellenson from Marquette, Jakob Poeltl from Utah, and the guy I think that you know, this is the guy that I chose yesterday when I went on Utah radio and picked number nine for the Raptors. I picked Timothée Luwawu from France. I know that's probably a bit of a reach for him given where he is on most boards, but I took him just because he's a 6'7 wing who's already shown he's probably going to be a pretty good defender. He can shoot pretty well. And, you know, maybe he's not totally refined and maybe he's, you know, got some things to iron out, but he's also 21. He might be ready to play a little bit next season. He's been playing pro in Serbia for this season on a pretty good team. So that's the guy I chose there. Just, I mean, Harsh, we've talked about this. Just, like, you can never have enough wings. And I think if you were to throw Luwawu in the mix, that kind of, you know, it frees you up, one, to sort of trade Terrence Ross and, you know, you have Powell and Luwawu as sort of your backup wings and that sort of a nice, cheap, cost-effective way to fill in those roster spots. And then, you know, hopefully improve somewhere else on the team if you can trade Ross and whatever for something at the four. I don't know. That's sort of where I went. Blake, where are you going in terms of those guys in that ugly group of blah?
Yeah, it's tough. Again, I go back to trying to figure out who is going to be the best player eventually, whether, you know, now or down the line. And without reaching too far, I'm kind of leading Deontay Davis. I know that Jakob Poeltl is like a good fit if Biombo's leaving. He can come in and play some defense at the center spot. He can push Bebe for that backup role. But I think Davis has the size to eventually be a five anyway. And even if he's not a five, you know, he's bouncy enough and has the defense to maybe play the four. I know there's not a lot of offensive game there right now, but I think if you look at this group, you know, I know that Skal has like the upside of anyone in this group, but I think Davis is, I don't know how to word it, maybe the most likely to reach a certain ceiling of this group. And the Raptors are in a position where, again, I know that everyone wants someone who can plug in and play minutes right now, but the D-League system has proven effective for a 19-year-old who needs to work on his body a little bit still and work on his offensive game a bit. I think it could be a good landing spot for him where he doesn't have to come in and contribute right away, and then you're looking maybe for contributions at the midway point of the season or something. I think he's going to be good down the line. I know he's not there yet, but of this completely uninspiring group, he's kind of where I'm leaning at nine. I don't have any intel as to whether the Raptors are leaning in that direction. He didn't come in for a workout. I haven't caught word that they had a private workout with him. So they'd only be going off of scouting and then the combine and any agency days or anything like that. But again, the in-house workouts are just a small part of the process. So it's tough to get a feel, but that's where I personally am leaning from that super unsexy group.
Just before we get to you, Harsh, I want to touch on Poeltl for a second because, like, I just wrote a profile of him and sort of his strengths and weaknesses and things like that. Thank God for Mike Schmitz because it is so hard to, like, find games that, you know, Poeltl played this year. Or does any college player play this year? It's so hard to just dig up games and go watch film. The things about Poeltl that I think he's going to be a pretty talented offensive player. I like that he's, you know, he seems pretty fluid for a guy who's 7'1", and seems pretty built. Like he seems to move really well. Schmitz pointed out that he can kind of switch onto smaller guys pretty easily. That sort of replaces, I guess, what you'd be losing with Biombo. That's sort of, you know, what he brings that Valanciunas doesn't bring. But in terms of offense, like he doesn't really have a jump shot at all. Nothing from mid range. Didn't take a three at all in college. And I think like it just seems like he was overlapped too much with Valanciunas offensively, where you wouldn't really be able to play the two of them together. He's not a great rim protector at all. He's sort of got like a small wingspan for a guy who's his size. I think he's only 7'1" wingspan, which isn't super encouraging. And I don't know. I think his offensive game is going to be good. He looks pretty fluid at the size of like a roller, for example. But I don't know. I'm not sold as I think it's just too easy for people to be like, oh, they need a backup center. Why don't you just take Poeltl? But Harsh, yeah. What do you have with the ninth pick? You're taking Poeltl, aren't you?
No, I'm not taking Poeltl at all. Look.
Can we just talk about the pronunciation of his last name for a
yeah,
second?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Like
I butchered the pronunciation at every turn, and like on Sam Bassini's podcast the other day that I appeared on, I butchered the pronunciation. I just did it again earlier here. There's no way I'm gonna say his name wrong. I don't know where the R sound comes in.
Yeah, it's weird. It's some Austrian thing, I guess.
This is some very white North American stuff for me right now.
what were we saying? Oh, you were asking me about Poeltl.
Or just who you would pick at nine. Also, what do you think of a Poeltl?
Okay, well, here's the thing. I like Poeltl a lot. Well, not a lot, but I like Poeltl. I think he's fine. And I guess I'm contradicting myself because I did say that you picked the best player available and, you know, he might possibly be the best player available of the bunch, but
that's the thing. First, like, it's so hard to say who the best player available is. Let's be honest. We know shit.
Yeah, and, like, even if he is, I just don't think the gap is high enough that you take a guy who has so many redundancies with Valanciunas. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, and he's not that much better than any of the guys below him. Like, I firmly believe that. Or at least I think. So as far as who I would pick, like Blake touched on Deontay Davis. I love Deontay Davis. For a guy who was 19 in his freshman season to be that good defensively, and to even get minutes the way that he did for Tom Izzo, like that speaks to how good he must have been. Like limited minutes, sure, but he was a game changer defensively. Like he would switch on, like the maturity that he showed switching on to smaller players. He reminds me a lot of like a weird cross between Tristan Thompson and Amir Johnson. Like the offensive game isn't there yet, but he has decent touch. He can shoot it a little bit. Like he needs to, all of these things need refinement, but his potential is pretty high. And I think there's a good chance that he reaches it just based on, you know, looking at his body of work as a freshman. Another guy I like, and I don't think you mentioned him, but I like Wade Baldwin a lot.
Right, right.
From Vanderbilt. He's only 20 years old. He's sort of a combo guard. Like, he plays point guard, but he has like this massive wingspan that he should be able to guard the two no problem. He's not a crazy gifted offensive player, but he can shoot the ball well, and he's a really, really talented defender. And you know, from what everybody says about him, like the makeup is really good. Like he was a leader for that team and all that good intangible stuff that you like to hear. So for all the talk about a guy like Jamal Murray, who is, you know, whose defensive, I guess, inability to play effective defense is going to hold him back, Wade Baldwin is the opposite of that, where he's not the most talented offensive player. Like, he's not going to score in the paint a ton, but he can shoot the ball and he distributes pretty well. He rebounds and he plays really good defense. And I like him a lot as a combo guard option that they can take at number 9.
Cool. We have more questions that are going to sort of get into some of the specific guys as well. So we'll save that there. I'm sure we'll overlap a little bit coming into the next segment. But just quickly before we get to a break, let's talk about pick number 27.
Sorry, Sean, host from you, but I think we're
sure, man.
By conspicuous by his absence, given Chad Ford's mock draft, we're all out on Henry Ellenson, right?
Oh,
well, that's a question. That's a question.
Oh, is it? So, okay.
Yeah. That's what I was getting at. So we'll get to him in the next segment. But first of all, before we get to a break, pick number 27, obviously not as much fanfare in discussing what the Raptors might do with it, given, you know, they have it not the 9th overall pick. But, you know, you can find a guy there who can either draft and stash, maybe. You can get a guy who can contribute. You know, Norman Powell was the 46th overall pick and ended up being a useful rotation player last season. So obviously number 27 means something. Guys, just a couple names off the top of your guys' heads who interest you in that spot. Harsh, let's start with you.
Sure. I guess, again, these guys might be kind of like reaches at 27, but 27 is a crapshoot anyway, so you might as well pick the guy that you like. 27, I like Patrick McCaw from UNLV. He's only 20 years old, another sophomore. Pretty good passer, pretty good rebounder, scored, I think, what was it, like 14 points a game last year, something like that. And his potential is as a wing defender that I'm really intrigued by. He's super athletic. He can shoot the ball decently well. And, you know, he profiles as the futuristic, you know, 3-and-D, like Danny Green type of player that every team seems to have these days. So I like Patrick McCaw a lot from UNLV. I think his stock is actually going up as time goes on, but we'll see.
He's also got some serious like bad game ops potential with like crow sounds.
Yes.
Like whenever you hit the basket.
Oh god.
So
yeah. That might be a deal breaker actually. I like Patrick McCaw. I like Gary Payton Jr. He's what, like 6'2"? He's like a tiny point guard. He's crazy athletic. He plays defense like a madman and can't really shoot the ball, but I just like his energy a lot. And if Blake is right in the fact that the Raptors, you know, trust their ability to turn guys into good shooters, like that's another option. And I guess the last name I'll throw out is Malcolm Brogdon from Virginia.
Right.
He's like 24 years old, but
he was ACC defensive player of the year, right?
He's a great defensive player. He can shoot the ball. I don't know if his shot looks kind of weird, so I don't know if it'll translate to the NBA, but I like his productivity a lot, and I think he was a leader. He was like the best player on like what, the number one seed, like number one overall seed this year. So I like Malcolm Brogdon a lot too. So those are just three of the guys that they should consider at 27.
Blake, a couple names from you?
Yeah, I'm really high on McCaw. I think he's probably playing himself out of that range, maybe. His stock's kind of all over the place, depending on who you read. But he was in for one of the workouts that was not public. And, you know, he fits the Raptors' profile. I'm not as sold on his jump shot currently as Harsh is, but I think there's enough there where he could develop into that kind of guy. And the passing from the wing that you could get, you know, if he can defend multiple positions and if he can pass like that from the wing. We talk so much about the need for floor spacing and shooting as for spot up guys. But one thing the Raptors could really stand to add too is another guy who, like Damari Carroll, can put the ball on the floor to attack closeouts and make that next pass. And McCaw's very much one of those guys. I'm with Harshon Brogdon, too. It was awesome talking to him at a workout the other day. That dude is very smart. He's already done his master's, even though, like, he just finished his fourth year, like, a couple weeks ago. He's, you know, he's really, really thick. Like, that dude does not skip leg day. I think he'd fit pretty well from a personality standpoint, talking to him and, you know, knowing what the Raptors look for with those kind of guys. He came in very familiar with what the Raptors do and where he may fit on the floor. I asked him about his shot, and he seemed very aware. Like, he spoke in specifics about what mechanically he's trying to tweak. So I think this is a guy who, even though he's 23 years old, knows what he needs to do to become a productive NBA player. The one name Harsh didn't mention that I like, if the Raptors use it on a domestic guy, is Taurean Prince, if he slips.
Oh, I love Taurean Prince.
He's another guy whose stock is kind of all over the place, but he's a guy who could come in and probably defend multiple positions. He shot the ball pretty well in college, you know, could stand to show a little bit more range, but he's a guy who can get to the rim, he can guard multiple spots. He kind of fits the Raptors mold. You know, I keep saying the Raptors mold. Masai Ujiri has not made enough draft picks as the Raptors GM for me to talk like this, but you get the idea in terms of the type of athletes that they like. I think if they were to use the number 9 pick, though, for something that they're going to keep, I think this is probably a draft and stash pick at 27. Right. And the names that I like there, I really like Isaiah Cordinier, the French two guard. Apparently, you know, I was going to say something I probably shouldn't say. I think he would be on the radar if he's willing to, you know, there's some discussion about whether or not he wants to do another year overseas. And the fact that he stayed in the draft suggests maybe someone's willing to keep him here. But the other two names, I like Paul Zipser from Germany, who profiles as a potential stretch four. Again, at 22, I'm not sure he's willing to do a stash year. But there's some nice offensive talent there. And then one name who's a little off the board and some people, you know, don't even have him on the first round radar is Rade Zagoric, the Serbian wing. That's a guy who, as I've watched a little bit more tape on him in recent days, and I think Schmitz just dropped something new on him the other day that I haven't gotten around to at Draft Express yet. He's a guy with a lot of skill. He's only 20 years old, too. So if you grab a guy like that and develop him overseas for a year, I think he's one of the higher upside plays that might be there for the draft and stash group. So I just threw out like 100 names. So clearly, you know, it's very like me to like these fringe guys more than the top prospects. So take all of this with a grain of salt, I guess.
You might hit on one. One guy that you guys didn't mention who, like, I don't have a ton of opinions on the 27. I'm a lot less caught up on the film than you guys are. DeAndre Bembry from St. Joe's. I really liked him in college. I know he's not a great shooter, but it felt like everything else he did, he just seemed like he did a lot well. And maybe he doesn't shoot, but I don't know. I think he can be a really good defender. And he just seemed like, you know, he was a pretty good playmaker. What do you guys think about Bembry?
I like Bembry. The reason I didn't mention him is because I don't have him on my list of guys that I think might be there at 27.
Yeah, that's how I felt as well. Like, I think his... He was going to be there, like, maybe before the tournament, but at this point, especially with the dearth of two-way wing options, and DeAndre Bembry is definitely one of those guys, and he looked really good in the tournament as well. I'd be surprised if he didn't go, like, late lottery to, like, the 20s, like, early 20s. Like, I would expect him to go around then. But, yeah,
but again, who knows? Any of these guys could slide.
That's
so,
true. That's true.
It's worth discussing. Yeah, I'm a fan also. It's really unfortunate what he's going through right now from a personal level, and that's kind of slowed his ability to work out for teams. But you know, everything I've read about this guy is again, like Brogdon, you know, the kind of high character guy the Raptors would want around their team and in their locker room anyway. So,
all right, so we'll leave that there. We're gonna take a quick break. On the other side, we have a ton of listener questions that we're gonna get to, mostly from our friends, but a couple from some listeners, and we'll get to that in just a second. So we'll be back in just a minute here on the headquarters. All right, Welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Harsh DeVay and Blake Murphy, giving you all of your draft coverage that you could possibly want for this kind of crappy draft. We're going to just do a bunch of listener questions. We got a whole bunch when I put out the call, so this might be a record, actually. So we'll get to all of them here. First up, this is from Danilo at Top Class Dante. He actually sent me a DM to say how much he likes the show, how much he listens, and it's the first time asking a question. So thank you, Danilo. I don't know what your name is, but thank you for the question. So first up, how likely is it that the Raptors trade out of the draft? We sort of talked about this already. It seems like trade out of the draft seems unlikely. I guess that means the ninth pick. Obviously, I don't think they trade 27 unless they're packaging both picks for something. But yeah, it seems kind of unlikely that they'll trade completely out of it. Especially if they're trying to include Ross, it probably is a thing where they got away for a month. So we don't need to go too far into that one. Next one from Danilo is, out of Marquise Chriss, Domantas Sabonis, and Henry Ellenson, who would make the most sense on the roster next year? Harsh, let's start with you.
Marquise Chriss. I think that one's easy as well. Like, I don't really like Henry Ellenson. And Domantas Sabonis, while I like him a lot as a player, like, the question is specifically fit on the Raptors. Well, wait, the question is fit on the Raptors for next year, right?
Yeah.
Well, screw it then. Just take Domantas Sabonis. Get us the Lithuanian Twin Towers. The new Louis Scola. No, but seriously, it's Marquise Chriss. I think he's the best option.
Blake?
Yeah, I think Chriss is my favorite of those three.
Save any Ellenson diatribes, because we have another question about him coming.
Yeah, through, so. I don't hate Ellenson. We'll get into that. But of those three names, it's Chriss, man. A couple weeks back, when Marquise Chriss's draft stock was still late lottery, he was the guy that I had circled. And, I still think, again, he's a guy where I don't think you could come in and expect a lot from him right away. So if the reader's question is just about 2016-17, he's not the answer. It's probably Sabonis. But in terms of who I would pick, Chriss's upside is just too much if he were to slide to number 9. You look at what you would want for the Raptors long-term four next to Jonas Valanciunas, and he's, he's it. If he hits, like, you know, his 75th percentile, projection. So Chriss is a guy I like a lot. I hope he slides back down. I hope this has all been, like, agent hype, and, he's a name that could slide on draft night. I don't think so, but fingers crossed.
Yeah, he's going as high as 3 in a couple of mock drafts, I think, right?
Yeah.
We'll see about that. Next is from Mitch Robson from Raptors HQ. Very original question. Do you think or hope the Raptors trade the pick for a piece or keep it in draft a prospect? We've sort of gone over this, Mitch, but thank you for the question. Next it is from Will Liu at William Liu.
Oh, God.
Friend of the show. Yeah, good God. He also hosts the Raptors Weekly Extra podcast with you, Blake. So check that out after you click on ours twice. How much do you detest Jakob Poeltl at number 9? Blake, I think you hate it just because of the name. I don't totally hate the idea of taking Poeltl if he's the most talented player. I just don't think he really fits with Valanciunas, and I think it's just sort of an easy, it's kind of a lazy way to just be like, all right, yeah, plug him in as the backup center and go. I'm not really sure how much he develops, especially if Valanciunas is going to have more of a role. I don't really see how he develops, and I don't really see how he offers sort of a different skill set like Biombo offered last year as the backup center. Harsh, what do you think?
I think, like, it would be okay. It's just so unsexy, man.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the most boring pick there. It's just like, yeah, just plug the next guy up in the mock drafts at number 9. Like, I just don't pick Jakob Poeltl. Pick somebody
but,
else.
But please. There's a reason he's there in the mock drafts, right?
I agree. And, like, I agree.
I don't love the unsexy, floor pick that much either. I do, Sean. I think you're overstating the need for him to fit well next to Valanciunas, just because we're talking about a rookie center who's going to be coming in and being expected to push Lucas Nogueira for backup minutes. We're not talking about, it's a number 9 pick in a weak draft. We're not talking about a guy you have to build the franchise around.
No, I guess what I'm trying to get at is that, like, if you're looking for a backup center for Valanciunas, I think you maybe just go the route you did last year and just try to find a cheap option.
There might not be cheap options. Like, are you here for Kevin Serafin?
I'm not totally out of care Kevin Serafin. I don't know.
Yeah.
Last year I was kind of into it.
The thing is with Poeltl is that if the Raptors made that pick, I would completely understand it. It would be fine. It's just like Harsh said, it's pretty unsexy. And, you know, Joshua Riddell, who or Riddle, I'm not sure how he pronounces his last name. He's someone whose draft work I've loved, and he has Pirtle as his number four prospect.
Yeah, I've seen that before too. Yeah, a lot of people are really high on him, and like,
yeah,
yeah.
So I don't know, and you know, he's got no one, none of the main draft rankers that I follow have him lower than 12. So he seems like a pretty safe guy. But again, safe's a tough sell on draft night. We all want to dream big, and I think that's why people kind of groan at the Pirtle pick. It has nothing to do with him. It just has everything to do with, you know, what you're dealing with that kind of a pick, which is, you know, floor and safe, and I don't know. It's fine.
There are a lot of things to, yeah. Like, there's a lot to like about Pirtle.
Yeah, he's
like
pretty good, like, man.
Yeah, like, his footwork's really good for a guy that big. He's pretty fluid, but, you know, the really high-profile, like, sexy, you know, centers that are coming out now, you look at, like, Kristaps Porzingis or Miles Turner, for example, or Karl-Anthony Towns. They're guys who can protect the rim. Yeah, sure. They're guys who can Blake with the deep cuts again. they're guys who can shoot threes and protect the rim. And Pirtle, while he has a lot of good things going for him, those are two things that I'm not sure ever really develop. And Harsh is still laughing at Ante Zizic.
Shout out to
I'm sorry, Harsh. Do you prefer Ivica Zubac?
I'm more of a Zuki guy myself. Shout out to Willu.
Yeah. Are we questioning Will Lou's age, by the way?
Oh my god! That head is not 22, man.
Cut that part.
That head is
that head is not 23.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. This is from Alexander McDonald at A McDonald. First time, long time. Can a responsible adult warn against the dangers of Henry Ellenson? Blake, let's start with you.
I just look. Henry Ellenson is ranked highly because he gets the stretch four label. He's pretty big, like big enough that maybe he could even be a stretch five in some smaller groups. The issues that I have are, one, I don't see any way he's going to be a good defensive player in the NBA, even though, you know, he's a guy, he's like a motor guy. He's not unathletic for a guy his size by any means, but he wasn't a particularly strong defender, and I don't, you know, he's got the size that he'll be able to bang a little bit, but I don't see him being a rangy defender at all. I don't see him as a guy, you know, I just kind of said you don't need to worry too much about fit with Valanciunas because there are enough minutes and roles to go around, but he's not a guy I think would be really all that safe to play defensively next to Valanciunas. And then we talk about the stretch aspect, and I know the shot is really pretty. I know he shot better in workouts than his college, but it's still a guy who shot 28.8% from the college three-point line last year. And if you are a guy who is getting drafted at number nine because you're a stretch four and because of your shooting, I would like to see more of a track record. Unfortunately, when he worked out, you know, I only got to see the one shooting drill and the one dunking drill. He shot the ball pretty well, but there are just...
Did he hit 79 out of 100?
He's not Jamal Murray, no. there are just too many questions for me. And the ceiling just isn't high enough. You know, when you get into guys with this many questions about what they could be, you hope that those questions are because of ceiling, not because of, you know, can this guy come in? And if he's getting sold as a guy who can come in and help right away at the power forward spot, I don't want to have this many questions about him. And if I do, he better have a ton of upside. And that upside's not there for him, I don't think.
Harsh, anything to add there?
No, I think Blake covered it pretty well. I think the main thing for me is the same thing, that he, for a guy who's supposed to be a lights out shooter, he shot like under 30% from three. And like, while he is skilled, like, he, you know, he averaged 17 and 10 as a freshman last year. Like, that's not nothing. Like, that's pretty significant. You look at his body, like, he looks kind of frail, like, and, you know, he's not really long. He can't really play defense. So, you know, he has skill, but it's just like, what's the upside here? Like, I just don't see it with him. Like, I can see him like making sense for a team, like as a role player someday down the line. Like, it's just another guy where the upside isn't really there for me. And that's why I just stay away from Henry Ellenson.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have much to add. I just want to add that, like, when I have seen, like, snippets of him, he does look incredibly slow on defense, and that scares the hell out of me, especially when you're at the four. Like, we've seen you know, Patrick Patterson is awesome at the four because he's fast and nimble. And most of the guys who are really good defensively at the four are, you know, they're not bruisers. They're guys who are quicker on their feet. I don't really see that from Ellinson. Next question comes from Justin Rowan at Cavs Canada. Do you three individually make a decision daily to be trash, or does it just happen? Whatever, man.
I make the decision to be trash, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, you actively just, like, turn your Twitter feed into a disaster zone, like, three times a week. So I think that's, like, a pretty, you know, conscious decision on your part.
Yeah.
It might just be part of the fabric of who I am.
Yeah.
Blake, what about you?
Why is Harsh so trash?
Why are you? Well, no, it's just why. Why are the three of us individually trash?
But you can I didn't think that question was. I thought that was only about Harsh.
No. It was about all of us. Like, why all three of us are trash?
I live my life on Twitter. That's why I'm trash. It's impossible to spend as much time on Twitter as I do and not be garbage.
So I guess that makes Justin trashed as well, if by that logic, because he's on there rather frequently. Next question comes from John Godis, our fellow co-host on here. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the 2013 draft, how shit is this draft? Let's go with you, Harsh.
Pretty shit.
What do you got?
Pretty shit. the 2013 draft, remember, man, that had freaking Anthony Bennett go number one.
Yeah, but it also had, like, Giannis and Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, but those guys were, like, 15th overall and, like, 27th overall.
Sure, and, like, but are we talking about, like, overall talent in the draft or just the top?
Honestly, I'd be surprised if this draft was as bad as that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it can. It's going to be tough to find a draft as poor as 2013. Even if those guys end up being top, you know, you can't go back and look at that and be like, oh, these picks should have gone higher. There just wasn't that much high end talent. And, you know, you can't look at a guy who went 15th and be like, oh, he should have been the number one pick. As much as people do those retro drafts, you can't do that. It would have been completely unreasonable at the time, or maybe it wouldn't have been. I don't know. I wasn't as deep into the draft for the 2013 season from a work perspective. I will say this about the 2016 draft: it is not as good as the 2015 draft, and it is much weaker than the 2017 draft. So if you're the Raptors and you're looking at the four first round picks you have over the next 2 years, I value, you know, those two next year, even though they're both going to be outside of the lottery, you know, more highly. I think next year, if you have the, say, the 20th and 24th pick, you know, that's probably comparable to the 9 and 27 this year, because the 2017 draft is that much better. The 2017 draft will also likely be the last time that we have a fixed rookie scale with a rising salary cap, because I'd assume that's something the league will take care of a little bit in the new CBA in 2017. So it's kind of the last call on having these super surplus value picks if you hit on them. I don't know how 2016 compares to 2013 necessarily, but compared to the talent last year and just the mix of value in the last year of this kind of cap era and the depth of next year's draft, I certainly value next year's picks more than this year's.
Man, I'm looking at the top 10 from 2013 right now. It is something else. Anthony Bennett, Victor Oladipo, Otto Porter, Cody Zeller, Alex Len is your top five. Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Trey Burke. Is KCP the best player in that group?
It's definitely not Trey Burke.
No, it's so bad. And then CJ McCollum's 10. Yeah. And then obviously Michael Carter-Williams.
Steven Adams. Oladipo is really solid too.
He is, yeah. Steven Adams is
I'm awesome. Still a Nerlens Noel believer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be great on the Hawks.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the next question. This one comes from Maroon. Is the Poeltl discussed... I'm screwing that up now, too. Thanks, Blake. Is the Poeltl discussed far too overblown? Where's the disgust coming from? Like, is that actually a thing? I haven't really noticed much, like, you know, opinion either way on him.
I think it's just like we said, it's just boring. It's just unsexy.
It's underwhelming, man.
It is underwhelming. Okay. Like even a guy like, look, at the end of the day, like they're gonna pick a guy and you're gonna sell yourself on the hope that he becomes, you know, the next superstar or a really good contributor to like a contending team, and it's just like Poeltl doesn't really move the ceiling all that much, or so it seems. Like, even if they pick a guy like Scal, like you're like, oh, you're gonna talk yourself into the fact that, oh, all he needs is, you know, 2 years in Mississauga and then he's ready to take off and he'll be the next Carl Towns or whatever. Like, that's what you'll sell yourself on. And you're not gonna do that with Jakob Poeltl, and that's the main reason.
Right. I just, like, it feels like this question sort of implies that there's been a lot of like hashtag never Jakob.
I think that,
like,
was more in a response to Will hating on Jakob Poeltl.
Okay. Blake, anything to add there?
No, I think we covered off Jakob Poeltl pretty well.
And
look, I'm gonna practice that name.
Yeah. I'll have a thing on him tomorrow at Raptors HQ as well, so check that out. Next question from Maroon is Timothée Luwawu ready to play next year? That's another name that's going to be a struggle if the Raptors take him. It's tough to say, right? Like, you see him playing in Serbia, obviously not like the greatest league in the world. Who knows if he's 21. He seems like he can defend and shoot. Like, maybe he can come in and provide, like, I don't know, 10 bench minutes a game. I don't know. But Blake, what do you think about him?
Honestly, I'm where the Raptors are. And again, this goes back to the rookie scale, potentially only lasting one more year. I really like the idea of sticking a guy overseas for a year, whether it's at 9 or 27, and then bringing him back next year when you lock in 4 years of that cheap rookie scale as the cap explodes even further. There's obviously surplus value in doing it now, but Luau Wu-Tang Clan. That's right. You could get those headlines. You get those headlines and those subheadings and those tweets. He'd be good for that with a name like that. I don't know. Like, I think it's very overblown how the term NBA ready. Like, I think very few of these guys are ready to come in and, you know, especially outside of that top eight group. And even a couple of those names are big projects. Very few guys are ready to come in and play like a big role right away. Like, you look at Mario Hezonja last year, and maybe that's probably the bar that if you're bringing in one of these European guys, maybe where you should set your expectations. And he shot the ball well, but, you know, I think he went, what, fifth overall? And he really didn't play that major a role on a shooting-starved team. So I think that's kind of where you need to set your expectation level for an overseas rookie. And if, you know, if the Raptors see value in that, I like him as a prospect. I think nine's maybe a little high for him. But I would prefer to have him develop on someone else's dime for one more season.
Harsh, what do you think of Luwawa, Ontario?
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
So
Chris Simon.
I really like Timothée Luwaterloo.
What did I start?
I like him. I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. Like, a lot of people were like looking at his stat line and being like, oh, you know, he averaged what, 15, 4, and 3 or something as a 21-year-old. But he played on a team. His team was called Megalex, I think.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
They had pink and green jerseys.
Yeah, and I think what they played, like, a really unique style, like some crazy pace, and they played all young guys, so some of the stat line is inflated. They sort of let him make mistakes if he needed to, which is a good strategy if you're trying to, you know, convince young talent to join your team. So anyway, I digress.
That team's like all 22-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so just, they are like a weird team, so that, take that with a grain of salt as well. He's good. Like, I like him. He's probably a little bit too high to take at 9. Like, it's just another one of these guys. Like, I find that it's just hard to know how it'll translate, especially right away.
Right.
I will say, if they draft him, I'm gonna order one of those pink and lime green jerseys.
Ooh, that's a good call.
Yeah. That'll be it just sucks that the Raptors already had him and let him go to the Denver Nuggets from the Raptors 905 this season. That's not too fun. He profiles pretty similarly.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So you guys are saying that if the Raptors take Timothy, you won't be saying Lou Wah-woo.
Wow.
God damn it. Can I is it too late to decline to appear on this podcast?
All right, moving on. This one comes from Mo Squared at Mo Square. What's Jaylen Brown's comp if he reaches his ceiling and if he reaches his floor? Harsh, let's start with you.
Ooh, ceiling. Let's just go DeMar DeRozan as a ceiling.
Okay.
He's probably like, he should be up.
Isn't he more of a forward though?
Yeah, but like, he's probably a slightly better shooter, and probably a better defender as well, but I don't know if he ever like develops the scoring instincts that DeMar has at this point. probably better defender. Did I say defender? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I want to say Paul George, but Paul George is easily like is it's the easy answer for any small shooting guard or small forward for their ceiling. If he hits his floor, it's hard to say, man. These guys, like, I don't know, Gerald Green, I don't know, something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Some so one of a bunch of these wing players bust every year, so yeah.
Blake, what do you got for these fun unnecessary comments?
I hate player comparisons. and the reason that I hesitate to make them is because if you go back on Deshaun Stevenson's NBA draft.net page, Michael his Jordan. Player comparison is Michael Jordan. I don't know. With Brown, you know, when we talk about floor, the floor is like anyone who is busted out of the league. Like any of these guys could miss. You know, you mentioned Gerald Green, but Gerald Green has had a pretty long career as you know, a 3-and-D guy without one of those components. like a three and dunks guy. And like, even if at the number 9 pick, if a guy lasted that long in the league, even that's a pretty good find there, as unsexy as Gerald Green would be. I don't know. I really don't like player comps, so I'm going to not answer that question.
All right, so Blake, Luwa won't be putting any player comps in any of his draft coverage.
I'm hanging up.
All right, next question from We the NBA Draft at RapsFan1237. If the Raps draft. Take Votel, which I think is Pirtle.
You mean Vertel, then?
Yeah, so Vertel. Can him and JV be the Oster twins?
I think this one's for Harsh, yeah.
Yeah. No, man, that's reserved for Domantas Sabonis.
Fair enough. All right, so we are gonna wrap. All right, I think we're done with the questions there. Thanks for putting up with terrible puns.
Seriously, the only thing worse than your pun game is your jump shot. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
I didn't honestly. I say that because I need to get that lob in. I didn't even get to watch much of your games.
Oh, you didn't scout me very much?
I don't even think I hit a set jumper. I think I only scored at the rim.
Oh, see, I only hit threes. Yeah. I was only shooting in, because like our team was down so much, so routinely, that we just kind of had to start bombing and go for the high variance.
There you go.
Sort of strategy.
Plus, when you're playing ones and twos, that high variance strategy swings even further.
Yeah. Tom Haverstraw, baby. And yeah, plus, like, no one respected me, so I had lots of time to shoot all the time as well. So.
Who is your player?
What's that? You're breaking up, but my player comparison is probably something like Louis Scola, really. Like, I try to play defense. I can't really do it. I'm not fast enough. Sometimes I'll hit a three. I'm an okay rebounder and just a good team guy. So, yeah, Louis Scola will be my player comp. I know you are Kirk Heinrich, obviously. So. Yeah.
So we're gonna take a poor man's Kirk Heinrich, which is like
yeah.
a thing that doesn't exist, but will probably get signed by the Timberwolves this year.
We did a whole thing, I think, back in the day, like on like a dead episode where we had nothing, just talking about our player comps.
Yeah. Well, sorry for rehashing that.
No, that's totally okay. Our games evolve. You can change who your comp is. All right. So we're gonna be back in just a second. We have a really bad episode sponsor, courtesy of Blake, that we're gonna get to on the other side. And we will get to that and wrap up the show. So we'll be back in just a second here at the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley here with Harsh Devay and Blake Murphy, wrapping up this draft edition of the podcast. With your episode sponsor, this week's episode sponsor is courtesy of Blake Murphy and his sick mind, Mamadou Ndiaye, who played 30 games for the Raptors from 2000 to 2003. He averaged 4.8 points, 3.2 rebounds, 1.1 blocks, shot 45% from the field as a 7-footer. Not great. 74% from the line. Not bad for a guy that big. Very, very uninspiring Raptor and very uninspiring episode sponsor. But let's dive into it. Anyone have any memories of Mamadou Ndiaye? Blake, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, first of all, he was part of that Keon Clark trade back in the day.
Right.
I also think he, you know, he pushes Bruno for, I think, the fewest minutes the Raptors ever played, like, staying on the roster an entire season. He played 10 minutes as a rookie. And he was, like, he's a guy that, like, you absolutely would think would have been drafted and stashed as, like, I forget how old he was, but he was, like, a late first-round pick out of Senegal.
He was 25.
Who went to Auburn, but, like, he was a super old college player. So, 25. Like, you couldn't really stash him as, like, one of those internationals who played in the NCAA. But, yeah, 10 minutes over the course of an entire season. I don't know. The name was kind of funny. The reason I thought of it is because there is another Mamadou Ndiaye in the draft this year. He's Draft Express has him ranked 97th out of 100 prospects. Also, Senegal to the NCAA. Also, a big center. I don't know. Maybe the same guy. I'm not sure.
Will he get drafted?
Will he? Yeah. I don't know, man. You like he's not ranked to be drafted, but like he's 7'4" and has a wingspan of over 8 feet, and he's almost 300 pounds.
Yeah,
he might even be taller than 7'4". That's
UC Irvine, right?
Yeah, that 7'4" is from a 2012 camp. Like that's the last time he had an official measurement. So in 2012, he was 7'4", 297 with an 8'1" wingspan, and like he didn't do a ton. And, like, he only blocked 2.2 shots per game. But, like, a guy that huge maybe gets a look in the second round. I don't know. The original Mamadou Ndiaye got a look in the first round.
Yeah. He was really fun for the Anteaters in the tournament last year for that one game. He was kind of a freak show, yeah. But it was cool.
I believe Kevin Pelton's a big fan.
Oh, yeah? All right. We'll keep Mamadou Ndiaye at 2.0 in mind. Harsh, do you have any memories of him before we play that random Raptors game?
Yeah, didn't he have 8 blocks in a game?
That is the game I picked.
Yeah, he had 8 blocks in a game. I remember that.
Yeah, so he had 8 blocks in a game on,
what is it? What a segue.
November 4th, 2002. Yeah, you're with it right now. Yeah. So November 4th, 2002, the Raptors played the Bulls. The fourth game of the season, Mamadou Ndiaye had 8 blocks. 12 points, 6 of 6 from the line, 3 of 5 from the field, 4 rebounds, an assist, a steal. Just a great game. His all-time career best game score per Basketball Reference for the Raptors. It was a 16.6 game score. I'm not really sure what that totally, you know, is found out of, but you guys want to play that random Raptors game with this game?
Let's do it.
All right. So the rules, as we've been over before, we'll go back and forth. Each guy will have a chance to name a Raptor that played for the Raptors in that game. Guy who gets the most guys correct by the time no one can guess anymore will win. So I think Harsh, you probably won the most at this game. You've done a pretty solid job. But since Blake is the guest, we will have Blake go first. So in this game, 9 Raptors played, including Mamadou Ndiaye, who came off the bench. So you need 5 starters and 3 bench guys left. Blake.
And this was the start of the 2002-2003 season?
Yes.
Okay, Alvin Williams for sure.
Correct. He had a team-high 25 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, 9 of 19 from the field. Pretty solid game all around from Alvin Williams. And 46 minutes played.
Damn.
Harsh.
What year is this again?
2002-2003, very beginning of the season.
Morris Peterson?
Correct. He had 9 points on 2 of 8 shooting, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. Sort of a blah game from Mo Pete. Back to you, Blake. 1-1.
JYD.
Correct. He started as well. He had 11 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, 5 of 11 from the field. Not bad from JYD. The Raptors won this game, by the way, I think.
That Bulls team, if I'm remembering, was really fun, and most of the guys ended up on the Raptors, right?
Yeah, like this, I want to go through this lineup as well, like in a second once we get to
was
it.
This, was this the year they made the big trade with the Bulls, or was that the year after?
I think this is the year they made the trade, okay. But it might be the year after as well. I'm not entirely sure. But the Raptors won this game 109-105, by the way, to move to 2-2 on the season. So, Blake, you're at 2. Harsh, you're at 1. And it's your turn again.
Oh, shit. Antonio Davis?
No Antonio Davis.
Crap.
Back to you, Blake.
2002-2003?
Yeah.
Vince.
Nope. Didn't play in this game.
He was injured, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's annoying. What a waste of
Back to you, Blake. It's Harsh. It's 2-1, Blake. You guys have two starters left and three guys on the bench.
Two starters. Who do we get? We got JYD, Mo Pete, and Alvin Williams.
Yeah.
So we got the two bigs left.
This is a bad team. To play
and Vince and Antonio Davis were both out.
Yeah, this is a trash team.
Where are you pulling deep?
Eric Montross.
No, he's always the first deep cut people go to, and it's only been right once. Shout out to Dan Grant. Your turn, Blake.
I'll stick on that same wavelength and say Michael Bradley.
Correct. Oh, wow. He played 10 minutes, 0 points, 3 rebounds, 2 turnovers, -2 in the game, 0-for-1 from the field. So a resounding effort from Michael Bradley.
Was he a starter?
No, he was off the bench. Oh,
so we're missing the starting center.
We're missing the starting center, starting two guard, and a couple of bench guys.
Starting two guard. What about Chris Jeffries?
Yes. Wow. He played 8 minutes. He came off the bench. He had 2 points on 1 of 3 shooting, 1 steal. Didn't do much. He was an even in the game.
Jesus Christ.
I'm impressed by that right now. So it's 3-2. There are three guys left. Two starters, one guy off the bench.
I have Chris Jeffries memories. I was really? So mad that they flipped Kareem Rush for Chris Jeffries at the draft. Like the pick that became Kareem Rush. I don't know why. I just remember being like super annoyed and hating Chris Jeffries because they gave up Kareem Rush to in that. And like it was a big multiplayer. Oh, for Sean Leonard.
Yes. Yeah. How did that just pop into your brain?
I think he was a part of the same trade.
Okay. So yeah, he had 23 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 steals. One block. He was a team best plus 12.
Five steals for him and 8 blocks for Mamadou. No wonder they won this game.
Man. This was awesome. The fact that Mamadou had the 8 blocks off the bench is really impressive in 23 minutes. That's crazy. There's two guys left. Blake, you're up 4-2. So Harsh, you can only hope for the tie here. There's a starting center and a wing off the bench.
Starting center. Lauren Woods.
No. Back to you, Blake. This is for the win.
Shit. Okay, now I'm panicking because I don't think Vashawn Leonard was in that trade. I think it was someone else. I don't think it was Vashawn Leonard, and now it's going to kill me trying to think of who it would have been.
This is your chance, Harsh. Maybe it'll be Blake's head here.
Oh, man.
All intentional.
All intentional, yeah. This is you winning the coin flip and conceding the shot. As the tiebreaker. 2002-2003.
Do you need like a couple more hints?
No, I'm just going to bang my head against the wall trying to figure out who was in that trade if it wasn't for Sean Leonard. You said we need a center?
Yeah.
Maceo Bastion?
No. Back to you, Harsh.
Lamon Murray?
No.
Shit.
Close, I guess.
Is there really a point at which we've guessed too many guys?
Yeah.
No, I just like until you guys just have no more like bullets in the gun.
Empty
just
the clip.
Yeah, pretty much. So one of these guys played one season with the Raptors, played 67 games, started 25, averaged 6.8 points. So there's that.
Is this the center or the wing?
This is the center. And the other guy in this game scored 23 points. He was a point guard slash shooting guard, sort of a smaller guy. Also only played one season with the Raptors. 29 games with the Raptors, so not many at all.
I'm trying to think of the most random-ass Raptors centers. There's been so many bad ones.
Yeah, this one is
just like top. I just have like this like cut scene of dudes getting dunked on in my head right now.
This one is high up on the list.
He's like, it's too early for Jerome Moiso, but he's like Jerome Moiso a Jace for sure. I got nothing. I don't think I have any more guesses.
All right, I'll guess one more and then you can tell us.
Okay. Yeah.
Rod Strickland.
No Rod Strickland.
Damn.
So Blake's going to take the win 4-2. Sorry. The two guys you missed, this point guard, shooting guard off the bench who scored 23 points on 7 of 18 shooting, 2 of 7 from 3, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals as well for him. Lindsey Hunter.
Oh,
shit. Geez. That was he's the one who was in the Chris Jeffries Kareem Rush trade. I don't know where I pulled Vashawn Leonard from then.
Yeah, I don't know. And the starting center, he played 29 minutes. He scored 4 points on 2 of 10 shooting.
Oh,
for 11 rebounds, 2 steals, a block, a couple fouls, turnover, plus 6. Jelani McCoy.
Jesus.
Jelani McCoy.
That team is awful, but this Bulls team is hilarious too. So here's their starting five is Jalen Rose, Jay Williams, Trenton Hassel, Tyson Chandler, Eddie Curry. And then they had 7 guys come off the bench. Donyell Marshall, Fred Hoiberg, Corey Blount, Jamal Crawford, Eddie Robinson, Marcus Fizer, and Lonnie Baxter.
Lonnie Baxter, future Raptor.
Yeah, he was in that trade.
Yeah, Rose, Marshall, and Baxter all would have come over, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, good times for...
I think you need to extend this game next year where, like, there's a B-side to the podcast where we all, like, watch the game in question together.
That is a good call.
Or, like, maybe do it one time. Because I don't think I could watch more than one of these old-ass games. But, like, this game, Mamadou Enjive just constantly swatting Jalen Rose away at the rim, I could watch.
Be okay with that, yeah, for sure. All right, guys, I think we're done here. Actually, we just got one last-minute question in, and it's kind of an interesting one that I don't think would actually happen, but it's an interesting question nonetheless. So we'll ask it. It'll be a sort of cherry on top of the podcast. This one comes from Alfie, at It's Really Alfred. T-Ross plus 9 for favors. Would Utah bite? I don't think they bite, but what do you think, Blake?
No, I don't think they bite. I think they already have a pick.
Yeah.
I don't think Ross, you know, they have wings. They have Burks, they have Hayward. They have Rodney Hood. They're not exactly starving for the Terrence Ross player type. They'd immediately then have a need for a big.
Yeah. Trey Lyles, baby.
Yeah, Trey Lyles is great. I think if you wanted to get in the Derek Favors conversation with them, you got to dangle Corey Joseph with their need for an extra point guard.
For sure. Harsh, anything to add there?
No, I think that's about right.
All right. So that's going to be it. Thank you guys for joining me for this very long podcast. I know, Harsh, you want to get in and watch the OJ documentary.
Oh, yeah.
I missed part one, so I got to catch up. But apparently it's really good. That's so
great.
Thank you so much. You can follow me on Twitter at Woodley Sean. Harsh is at I Am Harsh DeVea. We are both, of course, of Raptors HQ. Blake, thanks for coming on, man. At Blake Murphy ODC. You can find his work at Raptors Republic, Sportsnet, Vice, all over the place. Blake is the king. So thanks for coming on and taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Of course. And as always, you can subscribe. Write a review, rate, all those fun things for the podcast on iTunes, and subscribe. Yeah, just keep tabs. We're going to have lots of stuff going on in the summer. We have lots of fun sort of time-killy ideas for the summer as well, so we'll get to that. But until next time, thank you so much, and we'll be back next week with another episode of The Headquarters. Over!